The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, coming to your cordless, everybody. It's Tuesday, February 20th, 2024. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and 10 p.m. Central Time here where I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters. Welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night, installment number 87, if I'm correct. I can't remember. I've got the Biden disease. I'm just a frail old man who has a poor memory. That's what I am. Okay, I want to thank you guys for joining us. I got a little bit of apology to make last. First of all, I want to thank Larry Newman for joining us last night. Had a great conversation. Little bit of a problem. Not totally on my end. Blog Talk Radio was offline last night, so we could not connect with them. We have, in retrospect, we stripped the audio out of the video from last night's show on Rumble and YouTube and posted that on Blog Talk Radio, but we did not go live. Now, the problem with that is that I mentioned this at the top of the show, but I'm sure those of you tuning in did not notice. Several people tried to call in, and the call-in line, because Blog Talk Radio was offline, they provide the call-in number for us. It wasn't working. So I got quite a few text messages regarding that. So just want to apologize for that. It is working tonight. We are broadcasting on BTR Live right now, which is also the reason of those of you who watched the show late before the beginning of this month. We used to start at 2 minutes after 11 Eastern, and now we start at exactly 11 o'clock because we are on Blog Talk Radio. And they schedule their shows exactly at the top of the hour. So that's what we got going on here. We got it going on. I don't understand how, you know, I'm 68 years old. I'm fat. you don't want to know. You don't want to know about this. Okay, we got a lot of stuff going on. I'll tell you what we got going on because I'm going to look at the list right now. That's why I know. All right. First of all, I want to mention the fact, as I always do, our show is sponsored exclusively by Conk News at conk.com. And here, ladies and germs, oh, got it going on again. Jesus Christ, I don't know. It's like, here it is. There it is. That's the front page of Conk News in real time right now. So the reason we got this a little bug here, Conk News updates every 3 hours, and it seems to update about the time we go on the air. So I load the page up about a half hour before we start. If it updates before I actually put it on the screen, 45 minutes later, it doesn't show up. It's just a little bit of a bug we got. No big deal. But anyway, that's it. That's the front page of Conk News right now. If you go there, like I said, it does update every 3 hours. And what do I mean by updating? Well, it's a news aggregator. It gathers news from 75 different news sources. Excuse me. Sorry. Oh. And lays them out on the screen, on the front page, via servers and algorithm. It does a fantastic job at this. It puts the stories in more or less chronological order, regardless of their source. And the headlines you see are the headlines of the story. The photos come from the story, and if you click on any of them, you go directly to the story. So it's basically like a giant aggregated newspaper. There's no interstitial pages, none of that crap. So you get to read a little summary of what you're going to click through if you want to. It's a fantastic way to scan the news and scan a whole bunch of websites at the same time. You can't go wrong with this. If you're a news junkie, I keep saying it's like a sexual experience, and it is. CONK.com, Conk.com, Conk News. Check that out, okay? All right. So, tonight, our guest is Davis Hunt. He's the publisher and founder of the pamphleteer at pamphleteer.co. It's a local Nashville news publication, and here that is. Here's the front page of that in real time, too. And we'll talk to him in a few minutes. He'll be coming on around the half-hour mark. Really interesting guy. And also, we're going to talk to him about local news. Because, you know, I've been bitching about this, and I shouldn't bitch about this because I admit it. I'm not that interested in local news. And this is not a local news show. I mean, we occasionally talk about what's going on in Minneapolis here, you know, but and there's a few people we have on here who are in town here. But still, generally, that's not what we do. And I'm trying to figure out why I'm not interested in local news. I'm not. I'm going to ask him about this. We're going to talk about that. He's our guest tonight. Tomorrow night, the dynamic duo. That would be Jennifer Oliver O'Connell from redstate.com and Jeff Meyer, the CEO and publisher of Conk News at Conk.com. They come on once a month together. They shoot the shit and kind of bounce. It's like playing tennis, basically, with the news. It's a bounce back and forth. They've got a thing going on. They've had a thing going on for a couple of years now. So, I mean, this harkens back to the podcasts and radio shows I did at Conk News. I was formerly employed there. And so, yeah, they kind of fell in like star-crossed lovers. And so we put them on. We put them on once a month still. So. It works. Thursday, Mark Tapscott, the congressional correspondent for the Epoch Times out of New York City. He's on the Hill in Washington, D.C. basically every day, and he's been there basically for 40 years. Fascinating guy. Pretty much knows everybody in Congress on a first-name basis, knows all the dirt and all the shit, and we get that from him. He comes on every two, 3 months. We got to check in with him, especially right now with what's going on. Monday, the month in review panel. It's our second one. Don Zorro, Tim Conaway, and usually Larry Newman, but Larry won't be joining us this Monday. Larry is going to be in, Orlando? He's running for executive vice president of the National Bail Bondsman Association. I can't remember if that's what it's actually called, but that's what it is. It's the National Bail Bondsman Association. Anyway, we're doing that on Monday. I'm taking the rest of the week off. That would be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we'll be back the following Monday, which I think is March 5th, if I'm right. So, yeah, that's what's going on here. So I did tell you last night, the Blog Talk Radio telephone number kind of crapped out. Sorry about that. There's three different ways you can contact the show. So Davis Hunt is going to be on live. So I'm hesitant. I don't want to take video phone calls or, you know, smartphone calls while I'm doing a live interview with him. But if you want to call in audio or text in, the numbers are right here. 563-999-3435 will put you in the audio line, so you get on the audio queue. You just like dial in your phone. It's like calling a freaking radio station. The text number right here, I get the text in real time. The little monitor over here is 408-458-5088. You can text me at any time. I mean, obviously, if the show's not on, we're not taking texts in real time. But I do get all the texts. And you can also, if you really want to, off hours, you can leave me a 30-second voicemail, the number two. If you want to call in with a video with your camera, jimandnight.com/call, and you're wondering, well, why is it a web page? Well, that's because the whole thing is geared. It's super simple. You go to that web page. There's a giant blue button at the top of the screen. You press the button. You get to check your camera and mic. You're in the queue. It's easier than making a FaceTime call. I'm not kidding. It is. We're the first talk show in America, according to Talkers Magazine, to take video phone calls. I'm very proud of this, even though you guys don't seem to like to call in that much, but that's fine. I mean, we do get them. People do it. So I think it has something to do with the people, you, a lot of people don't want their face on the screen. Okay, fine, you know. And which is one of the reasons we ended up with the Blog Talk Radio audio telephone number, because you can call in and don't have to worry about it. Now, actually, if you really want to, you can. I don't talk about this a lot anymore because now it's redundant. You can call in audio only with your camera in the preview screen before you're put in the queue at jimandnight.com/call. On the, there's a pull down menu where you can choose no video. For your camera, and that will essentially mute your camera or whatever the hell you want to call it. I don't know what the word is. Yeah, so there, anyway, there's the announcements. That's what we got going on here. So what's going on in the world? I'll tell you what's going on in the world. Nikki Haley gave a speech tonight, this afternoon. I saw it live. I watched the whole thing because I have nothing better to do than do this for you, so you don't have to. And a lot of people thought she was going to announce dropping out of the race. She actually announced the opposite. She said she's going to be running until Super Tuesday. And she basically kind of indirectly conceded she's not going to win on Saturday in South Carolina. You know, she said, well, you know, we're having an election in South Carolina on Saturday, and I will still be in the race on Sunday, is basically what she said, kind of, sort of. I'm paraphrasing. So, you know, the question is, why is she doing this? I mean, she's getting clobbered in the polls. Now, the polls aren't always right. And I have said, I have been saying since the beginning, she should at least stay in South Carolina. It's her home state. You know, I mean, she could pull, there's a possibility she'd pull a massive upset. There is. You know, so, okay, fine. You know, and let's say she doesn't, and she probably won't. But then I would say the good money would be, you know, maybe it's time to call it quits. I hate, this is a sexist comment I'm going to say, but I'm going to mention this. I had lunch with a software entrepreneur. This is about 20 years ago now. This guy's not famous to the public, but he's pretty well known in the Silicon Valley software business and in the computer business. Yeah, he would, you know, he's like, you know, I don't know what you call, what's his name? That PR guy said he's locally famous or something like that. Maybe how you want to put it. But no, you've never heard of him. But people in the software business kind of know who this guy is. And I still remember talking to him. And I still remember, I don't know how we got on the subject, you know, about the fact he was talking about women in the office. You know, now he's a gay man too. So this, it actually makes this comment doubly prescient. And like I said, this is going to come off highly sexist, but I'm going to mention this anyway because it's pertinent to the discussion. So I'm talking to him about women in the office. He said, yeah, it's really interesting. Have you noticed this? He's talking, you know, about there's a difference between men and women at work. And I said, how's that? He said, well, men will lose a battle and will retreat and come back to fight another day. He said, women won't ever let go, ever. They will claw and scream and they will not quit. And, you know, his words, not mine, they don't seem to get the concept of retreating and maybe regrouping and coming back. He said, they just won't quit. They won't. And I'm looking at Nikki today, I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking, yeah, maybe there's something to that. I don't know. The other thing, and I've said this before, I think she might be a little addicted to the attention. I got to admit it. People, and that's not a female thing. You may think so. Those straight men out there who have dated straight women, you know, maybe they're, you know, you might think that, I think she might be. Oh, we got a phone call. I'm gonna take this. Here we go. Hi, you're on the air. Who's this?
Okay, my name's Joe. Can you hear me?
Hello. Hello.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. You can't hear me?
I can hear you. Now I can hear you. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Now you can. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now I
yeah.
got faulty wire. All right. So you're talking about, don't worry about being sexist. Okay, so, because the guy that you were talking to is probably 100% correct. You can't even give a woman a compliment in the office today without getting written up by HR.
Yeah, I know.
Years ago. Yeah, if you were in by the the water cooler, it was a place where you met and possibly dated, but you can't do that anymore. As a matter of fact, men and this has been going on for over 30 years, men won't close the door when there is a woman in the office, just a single woman and the manager himself.
Yes, that's correct.
Because he doesn't want to be accused of anything.
That's right.
And it's gone even further than that. They don't even want to mentor women anymore because they don't want to have some woman complain, he brushed my shoulder, or he was sexist because he said my perfume was nice.
Yeah.
Fuck that. So men are saying, get the fuck away from me.
That's right.
That's what they're saying.
That's correct. Was your name Joe, was it?
I can't blame him.
Was it
Joe?
Yeah, Joe. So, yeah, Joe, you're talking about the same thing I'm talking about, and that is nowadays, if you were to say to a woman in the office that that's a nice dress you have on today, that's borderline illegal. And that's crazy.
Borderline. It's not even borderline. If you say it two or three times, it's going to be considered sexual assault.
Or harassment, right, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, so what do you think of my theory about the fact that the women can't let it go, you know, like when it comes to battles? Well, they can't
let it go. That's because...
I'm sorry?
Because they have a law on their side. I was in a discussion just recently. And if you're a single man, you have a better chance than if you're married. Because if you're married... the woman can divorce you. I think 75-80% of the women initiate divorces, and they don't really have a very good reason other than, you know, the legal irreconcilable differences. But what the real reason is that they get bored with being married, and they think the grass is greener on the other side, and so they have divorce insurance called alimony. So they take about, if you're middle class, it'll take about 30%, 40% of what you've got. If you're upper middle class or rich, they'll take 50% of what you have. Continue to work, get the alimony, then continue to bay at the moon. I am strong and independent.
Yeah.
I would love to meet a real woman who is really strong and really independent. You will not find them.
Yeah.
They will claim it, but you won't find it.
Yes, I would make the observation that you know, you're talking about women leaving marriages because they're bored. They don't even know they're bored. They don't know the reason they're doing it.
A lot of times they don't.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of the YouTube videos? A few of these women who have been divorced are actually crying and want their ex-husbands back.
Yeah.
Because, as you're saying, they don't even know what the reason is. They just know that something, well, they are bored, and they blame him.
Yeah.
But they want to blame him as opposed to blaming themselves for not putting any spice in the relationship. Women want men to do everything, all the heavy lifting, the entertaining, the pulling out of the chairs, the opening of the doors, and to go to war. Now, men don't mind doing it. That's my headphone. Stupid headphone. Men don't mind doing it if they get appreciation for it. Men do not get appreciated for it. Women believe you're the man, you're supposed to do this. So when you ask a woman, what do you bring to the table? They give you the most ridiculous answers.
And that is?
Well, I bring me.
Everything. Right.
I bring nurturing.
Uh-huh.
And you say, yes, so what else do you bring? Well, I've got my own house. I've got my own car. I've got a job. We don't care about that. What do you bring to the relationship? They do not know.
Yes.
That's a major problem. If you don't know what your attributes are and what you bring to the relationship to make the relationship work, then what good are you? And you don't know that the relationship is broken down because of your lack of attributes.
Hey, Joe, let me ask you, what part of the country are you in?
Montana.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to run an idea by you here, too. I think down south, especially when, maybe this is not true anymore, maybe it was true 20, 30, 40 years ago, the women there seem to be a little more aware of like what's going on as far as like what they're bringing to the relationship. That just seems to be my, I've never dated a Southern woman. I've been married 35 years now, but being down there, that just seems to be kind of sort of, I got the idea that they seem to be more in tune with actually what's going on. Have you found that, or did you ever spend any time down there? Or? Hello? Oh, I lost him. Okay, well, all right. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Joe dropped out. Yeah, hold on. He might be back. Are you back? Hello? Is that you? All right, I can't hear you. Sorry if you're on. Anyway, I want to thank Joe for calling, and just to continue what I was talking about the fact that, yeah, and this probably is pertinent to his discussion too, is that I think that Nikki Haley's probably doing this because she loves the attention. I think that she's gotten addicted to the attention now. And once again, you know, oh, Jesus. Okay, hold on a second here. Man. All right, I want to tell you folks, I'm sorry about this. We just disconnected from Blog Talk Radio again. So not only now is Joe not connected, we're not connected either. So I'm sorry, I'm running this myself, you know. So, and we got Davis Hunt coming on here in a few minutes. So, yeah, this is all messed up. Sorry about that. So now I assume the call-in number is not going to work anymore because we are offline at Blog Talk Radio. So sorry about that. Yeah, don't use the 563 number. It's not working right now. It isn't. Yeah, so at any rate. So I was talking about Nikki Haley's speech, and yeah, she's not quitting. That's the deal. She says she's in it for the long haul. She says she's doing it for the people. I don't quite understand that. I just think it might be a little bit irrational. I don't know. No one seems to have any idea why she's doing this. She's certainly not running for VP. I mean, her and Donald Trump are on the outs right now. It's pretty obvious if you talk to both of them. They both say that. And then there's the possibility that she's sticking in it in case something happens to Trump. I mean, there is a possibility that by Election Day, he might be in jail. It's a slight possibility. I don't think it's going to happen, but it is possible based on what's going on right now. And also, I mean, this thing, I mean, I've talked about this a couple nights ago. This thing with this judgment that Engeron, the judge in New York, passed down, this is so blatantly, well, first of all, it's unconstitutional. He was fined $355 million on losses of zero. Nobody got defrauded. Nobody. Now, according to the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, that's excessive fines are against the law, are unconstitutional. It's the same amendment that says that cruel and unusual punishment is unconstitutional. It also says excessive fines are. So, all right, how do you set a fine when nobody has lost any money? You know, I mean, it's crazy crap. And so what is, you know, like what you $355 million on no losses, none. So now Trump is not, this is actually civil lawsuit. And that's also, some of the legal experts have brought this up too. The reason they didn't file a criminal lawsuit is because they knew they could not get it past a jury. because there was no one was defrauded. So it's a civil lawsuit that's brought by the state of New York. And that's even that's kind of weird. So, the whole thing's just, it's so plainly, obviously, electioneering bullshit that, and not only that, in the state of New York, this is not, I thought that Enron actually imposed this, but this is actually the law in the state of New York that to file an appeal, you have to put the entire amount that you've been fined up as bond to even file the appeal. So he has to come up with, he has to come up with about $400 million just to file an appeal. Almost half a billion bucks. And nobody lost a dime. It's like, it's just plain, just crazy. I don't, it makes me kind of nuts. And it's also kind of sad too. It's like, this is what a republic has come to. It's like banana republic, Russian oligarchy, mob bullshit. That's what it is. So, the other thing that here's the other thing I got to talk about for the A block too. We got economic growth. This is our friend David Strom at Hot Air, the associate of hotair.com. He wrote this article on Hot Air called "Economic Growth is Happening Mainly in Red States," and that's true. But the really funny part, if you ask the people at ABC News why, they will tell you it's because of warm weather and young liberals moving to red states. They had nothing to do with policies. Nothing at all. Okay, Davis Hunt is here. So I'm going to play the little bumper music stuff, and we're going to put him on the air. Oh, here we go. Hey, Davis, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. We've had a little bit of technical snafu here today, but so far so good. Anyway, I'm looking at you, and you're looking at me, and you're way better. You're way better looking than I am.
I'm a little younger, so maybe that's
why. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you can tell, huh? Yeah, I know. I'm an old guy. Yeah. Hey, first of all, what is your background? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee.
So you are a local person, huh?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh huh. And what made you want to start this local news website?
It's kind of a weird story. I went to Auburn, studied computer science, and wrote software for a while, and ended up working in the film and entertainment industry after that. And while I was doing,
you mean in California or in Tennessee?
In California, in Los Angeles, and some in Tennessee, South Georgia, North Louisiana.
I lived there for a few years too. What did you think of living there?
LA is a dump. I'll tell you. When I move out there, you get like really into the kind of the hustle work culture out there. Uh-huh. I was going to start a production company with a buddy. We had plans, as everyone does when you go out there. And COVID hit in March and shut down all the work that I had. And, I'm sitting in my apartment where homeless people are wandering the sidewalks. I'm being physically accosted by them almost on a daily basis. And without any work to do, which was the real reason I was there, it was like the wool got pulled back from my eyes. And I looked around and I was like, this is an open trash can. I was immediately repulsed. And it was the easiest decision I've ever made to move out.
Yeah. So I got to tell you, I hated it, too. And I lived there for like 35 years ago, but I find the place kind of fascinating in a really perverse way.
Yeah. Yes. I have mixed feelings. So I agree with that. There is the seediness of it and kind of the dark allure of the city is interesting in a kind of a perverse way. I agree with that. There is something kind of frenetic about it. I was out there recently for a wedding. And, I just rented a car and was driving around. And I mean, one thing about LA, everyone talks about the traffic, but one of the more insane things is the freeways out there. The way that people drive on the freeways is just crazy. There's something when there's no traffic, there's something about driving around that city where you just, you feel, I don't know how to describe it, but it's very energizing to drive around on the LA, to drive around out there.
I agree.
And yeah, so I, you know, I, it's easy to talk trash about, it's got its perks, I guess. I don't know. If I had a clear path to like what work might look like, maybe I would have stayed out there, but I seriously doubt it. At this point, I think the city's so far gone that it's kind of hard to justify living out there.
I've never been to Nashville, but everyone says it's a really cool place. I mean, do you think that too, having grown up there?
Yeah. I mean, I love Nashville. I've moved away twice. Well, three times if you count college, but I lived in North California working in kind of, you know, Silicon Valley tech area. And the thought was always bring back what I learned in these areas and bring it back to Nashville and do something here. I've always kind of in my mind's eye, I've always imagined myself in Nashville long-term, never wanting to go anywhere else. It's an interesting city. It's obviously changed a lot. The word city, I even chafe at using for it. I don't know that it even, I think that word maybe is used a little too commonly, but Nashville doesn't really feel like a city to me. It's got, you know, this downtown entertainment core now, but it's still a tiny, tiny place. It still feels small to me. Maybe that's just because I grew up here and kind of know people, but.
Well, I don't even know. What is the population of the metro?
700,000
of the whole thing, and not just the city, the whole metro, huh?
Well, Metro Davidson County and Metro Nashville are one. They consolidated the two back in the 60s. I think 62 was when they consolidated. So the city, there's no municipality separate from the county. Davidson County is the metro, is the metro area.
Yeah, that's not very big. I mean, I'm here in Minneapolis. We have 3.5 million people, you know, and this is only the 15th largest city in America. So
yeah,
you're right. I never knew that. I didn't know it was that small. I didn't.
Well, I was talking about this with some buddies today. One of the common things about Nashville is that when you ask growing up, you leave home, you go to college, you're working out. People ask where you're from and you say Nashville. And the question is always Nashville. Like, do you mean like the city of Nashville or any of the surrounding counties? Because people will commonly say Nashville just kind of in the way that you would, just because it's more familiar than saying Brentwood or Sumner County or you know, any of these other kind of like bordering Hendersonville, which I would have never considered part of Nashville growing up. But when you start to meet people that are kind of from the surrounding area, they'll say that just to kind of anchor it. So there's this kind of Middle Tennessee is kind of its own. The ring counties around Nashville is you know, extended Nashville. A lot of the statistics about how many people were moving to Nashville were not how many people were moving to Davidson County, but to surrounding counties. There was a stat that was passed around that the people moving here a day, and that was not to Nashville proper. That was to Nashville included in the MSA, the Metro Statistical Area, which includes, you know, bordering counties and some even that border those border counties.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've only been running the pamphleteer, what, a couple of years then, right?
Yeah, 2 years. I've done prior to this, I did back in 2015, 2016, I did kind of a similar project on the side of my other jobs with a buddy. We did, you know, just like once or twice a week newsletter. We're a newsletter is the main thing. Once or twice a week newsletter about local politics. Like we had an event calendar and that kind of thing.
So hold up. I just want to make sure I'm clear about this. I saw the newsletter on your website, but you consider it primarily a newsletter and then the website accompanies it. Is that pretty much the way it works?
Yeah. Yeah. The website is just so that you can, you know, sign up for some of the articles we publish.
I didn't realize that. So does the newsletter go out weekly?
Yeah, you didn't realize that going on the website? Maybe
I need to change that. I didn't. No, I thought, sorry. I mean, I don't know if you can see it. I got the website. It's just queued up here right now. It's the front page right now. So,
yeah, that's today's newsletter at the top there.
Right.
And, yeah, we've got...
I'm stupid.
No, I mean, maybe it's not clear. It's possible that it's not clear. You kind of, The website, I always imagined it as being this kind of feed with the thing at the top that we had published that day.
Yeah.
And hoping that people kind of understood that us leading with what we published, the newsletter that day, would make that clear. I think it just depends. But, you know, we push people to sign up for the newsletter. That's their main distribution network. I mean, if you have an email subscriber list, you own that. No one can take it from you.
Of course. That's right.
So, you know, it's the most valuable asset you can build, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you have advertising on the newsletter?
No, we take, at some point I imagine that we will. I don't really have the resources at the moment to go out and pursue advertisers. But we take donations, and so you can subscribe for a recurring donation, that kind of thing. It's kind of, you know, in the spirit of supporting the work more than any perks, but.
Right. So why did you decide to do local news? I mean, you know, here's my, I was telling you this before you came on. I've kind of been vocal with my audience about this generally, and that is, I don't know why I'm not interested in local news. I mean, I don't do it, you know, and I don't know why.
I don't know. I think that it's the way that I describe it is you're competing with the Hollywood production is the news organizations that are reporting on what's going on in D.C. and the A-list actors are the politicians in D.C. I mean, they're generally the most talented. And when you start reporting at a city level, you're dealing with, you know, less talented politicians and less just the issues are not as big. And I mean, it's I think Stanley Kubrick said that the most boring occupation in the world was local news. And I come from a film background. So I always kind of like, you know, part of me is trying to disprove that theory by injecting a little bit of energy into it.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, I admire you, man, because it's tough.
I mean, look, I don't know. I don't know what possessed me to do it. It was something. It's been a preoccupation for a long time, though. Being interested, I think it starts from being interested in my immediate environment.
Uh-huh.
Kind of. I mean, you know, my theory of politics as it relates to the media is that I do think that a lot of kind of natural political energy that people have. I mean, we're political creatures by nature. And a lot of the political energy that we have gets absorbed or expended in reacting to news. And so, you know, part of my like what I've tried to do, and I don't know how effective I've been, but, you know, what we try to do is we try to kind of channel that latent political energy more locally. So part of that part of doing that is also being entertaining. Like you can't just. A lot of people get into local news stuff and they're just kind of dryly relaying the news and they think that people are going to support, you know, journalism because it's important or this and that. And I kind of I've tried to take the more realistic approach, which is you're competing with, you know, you're competing with movie studios and you're like an indie film producer. And uh-huh. So you have to come up with some tricks and some approaches or rhetorical angles on stuff that engages people in local stuff, because the people that you're competing with are either, you know, they have more tools at their disposal and they're also generally more talented. So, you know, at the local level, you have to like, you have to find a way to do it. And the people that try to do this that come from the left, it always kind of comes across as too, I don't know, twee and cutesy.
Yes.
And, you know, because they do, I think some of them realize this. There's been some fairly successful, you know, media products in the local realm. I mean, not profitable. Don't get me wrong. None of this is profitable.
Well, I mean, if you're going to include local television news, it's generally profitable still.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yes. You know,
matter of fact, I was going to say that the problem, although I'm actually agreeing with you here, as far as being entertaining and trying to deliver the local news, most local television stations try that and they just come off fucking sad.
Yeah. There's a heyday of local television where it probably genuinely was entertaining and
you
didn't have the internet, but the internet has unleashed this kind of this wild card energy that once you spend time online and you're looking at memes and watching, you know, weird videos and I don't know, whatever people do online, then you go back to like the traditional media outlets and it's just not funny.
No,
to me at least. You know.
No, you're absolutely right.
So, I think that most people, I'm younger. So I think that a lot of young people feel that way about more traditional media. And so, kind of have tried to lean into that to varying degrees of success.
But it's generally true. I don't think it has anything to do with your age per se. I mean, it's just lame.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, I've got this like theory about why movies don't have as much cultural impact as they used to. There's multiple reasons.
Please, I want to hear this because I think
but,
this.
But is but one reason is because you can watch a 5-second video now that is arguably more entertaining than a movie and engages you just as much, or even a 1-minute video or something. I mean, there's a list of videos that I can like that I probably have saved on my phone or something that I could just cycle through and watch for hours, just and get just so much, like they make me laugh repeatedly or something.
Yeah.
So people always want to blame it on attention span, but I think the format of like a video audio visual stuff has just kind of been condensed and have become more kind of astute.
You're absolutely right. I never thought I have cat videos that I'd rather watch than most mainstream Hollywood productions.
I mean, I like right now I love watching cooking videos. I've got my my like Instagram thing so that the only thing I see is cooking videos. So if I ever want to watch cooking videos because I like to cook, is I just go on there, scroll, like everyone, some of the people that do the cooking videos have a whole narrative and a character that they play. Other people just kind of edit it very quickly, but I mean, you know, it's engaging and it's interesting, and a lot of them tell a story. And
I have to do an aside here. I mean, you're a real man. You like to cook. I mean, this is pretty cool. I like to cook too. I have to tell you, my wife will tell you, among all our friends, it's the men who do all the great cooking. You know.
You know what they say. The old Anglo spirit is woman get in the kitchen. The French are don't let the women in the kitchen because that's where the men belong. I'm very Anglo, but I kind of inhabit the French spirit on that one. Like I want to be in the kitchen. I don't want to trust it to the.
But I don't have to tell you this. People your age basically don't cook. I mean, it's terrible, but.
Yeah, I think there are people that do cook. But the options are. It's so easy to not cook now. It's even easier than drive through. You've got DoorDash or whatever.
Right. Right.
Or Uber Eats. You're almost incentivized not to cook, and then people are exhausted when they get home. I don't know. I enjoy cooking. It generally is part of kind of. I mean, I cooked dinner tonight. I just made. What did you make?
I want to hear.
I made some short ribs a couple of days ago, and I just had them left over. So I just broke them apart, warmed them up in the reduction sauce that I'd made, and then put them over some polenta. I mean, like very simple because I'd already made the short ribs. It's very satisfying meal.
Are you married?
No.
Do you have a girlfriend? Or I mean, is that your persuasion? I don't even know.
I'm a heterosexual male. White male. Most endangered species on the planet, right?
That's correct. And you're trying to kill and colonize everything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So you were talking about like local news, and you are right about the fact that in politics that the talent goes from the top to the bottom. But the problem is the top is not very talented either. I mean, and if you follow local news in any market anywhere, by the time you get down to the local level, you're basically dealing with lunatics. I mean, have you figured this out?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to talk too much trash. I've got my disagreements.
Right. You don't have to talk trash about people in Nashville. I understand that. But just generally, go ahead.
Yeah. It's how it works. It's like the big leagues and the little leagues. I mean, if you're working at a local, unless you're a crazed person like I am, you've got career ambitions. You want to go work for the New York Times, or you want to go work for some other big publication. You want bigger things. I've like constrained my ambitions to Nashville in particular at the moment. I think it's like, it's just, the analogy would just be like, it's the minor leagues and the mainstream outlets are the big leagues.
Yeah. I got to address this, and this is kind of a personal thing, but I think based on what you just said, you can relate. So you're right. People, you know, everyone has their ambitions. You want to be with the New York Times, you want to be in CBS or Fox News or whatever the hell it is. But, you're also talking about the fact that compared to what we're doing this very moment, television news is lame. And yeah. So my dilemma is, I mean, I'm kind of sort of trying to license this show and that sort of thing. But my dilemma is that if I get too much out of this, it becomes bullshit.
Yeah, I mean? Yeah.
I mean, it's really it's like there's a duality going on here that's like not entirely satisfying on either side.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because part of the demand of broadening the appeal of something means, in a way, watering it down to some extent to make it more, digestible by other people. And I think that's a dilemma that's not unique to media. I think it's unique to any creative medium, really. I mean,
yeah.
If you think about
based on what you said earlier, the problem with like this particular media that we're doing right now, or like what you're doing with the pamphleteer, is that it's not even just a matter of watering it down. It's like if you move it to another more established venue, it actually is different. It changes. It's more than watered down. It almost becomes a different medium.
Yeah. So are you saying that if what I was doing was in association with Fox News, let's say, it would be different? Or
newsletters, I suppose, maybe are pretty movable.
I think I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is that independent media, which we're both basically in independent media, has a distinct flair to it that's kind of distinct from these established brands that people operate under. So we're more operating as individuals than we are as employees of some bigger media brand. And that once you go and associate with one of those bigger media brands, it kind of saps the life out of it.
But in the case of video, like we're doing now, or I would say even audio podcasting, if you move it to a traditional medium, you have to substantially change the product. It's just a matter of watering it down. You have to account for commercials. You have to hit the post. You can't swear. All this stuff, and it substantially changes the product.
Yes, definitely true. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't. That's what's been interesting about watching Tucker Carlson kind of adapt to post.
Yes.
That's
a perfect example, kind of in reverse. The only thing is he's fabulously wealthy, so he can afford to do it, but
he's kind of lost. Like the thing about Tucker that was valuable was that he was on Fox News, and the big thing about his shows was always his monologues. That's what everyone would watch.
Right.
And the cool, and even if legacy media has kind of lost, has lost some of its control and power and veneer of authority, it still does carry with it some significance. People still, I think it's very hard to kind of deprogram the fact that being on Fox News meant that you went through this thick apparatus to get to it. You had to really earn your way up there. And then Tucker Carlson is on Fox News, saying certain things that would otherwise not be said on Fox News. It was a pretty powerful thing to have him up there doing that. And now, now he's in the ghetto with everyone else.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of money, but he's got the same distribution mediums that we all have access to. Even if Fox News was, you have to work to get on there. It would take me effort to get on there. I could put, you know, we can put out video podcasts and articles, et cetera, and throw them out into the void. But if you want to get on these like sanctioned channels like Fox News, you know, you have to play by different rules. You have to change the format and, you know, yeah.
So I take it that you lean conservative.
Yes.
How does a guy, how old are you, may I ask?
33.
Did you mention that, or did I guess that in my head? I can't remember.
You must have guessed it in your head.
That's what I was going to guess, that you were 33. Yeah. Huh. All right. So most people your age are not conservative. Did you come out of the womb that way? Or, I mean, I've known a few people who have, but generally, you know, people, almost the vast majority of younger people are liberal, at least in their youth.
You know? I mean, I grew up in a very, you know, in a conservative Christian family. And I mean, I had my rebellious periods, but I think whenever I thought about politics, I generally just did not think that generally, I think I had a repulsion for both political parties, and I still do to some extent, less so for Republicans than Democrats. But I don't know that I was ever, I always lived my life as a conservative. But I'd say that living on the West Coast made it very clear to me what the perils of not taking politics and government seriously were. And the solutions that I naturally align with in that regard tend to be solutions on the right. And so, you know, I don't know. I really hate the label. I mean, this is such a stupid thing to complain about because people are going to call you it. It's just the way that we talk now. I really don't like the label conservative just because it comes with this veneer of loss. I mean, conservative to me, and I think a lot of people, it just kind of has this, we need like a rebrand or something. It's got this just stench of losing.
Well, do you think, I think a lot of people consider like the libertarian moniker kind of like the new conservatism. Do you think that's the rebrand?
Yeah. I mean, I would have identified as libertarian. I identified as libertarian for most of my life, actually, I would say all through high school, college. I was a big Ron Paul guy in college. After that, when I was kind of apathetic towards politics, libertarian, definitely libertarian. The problem with libertarianism as I see it now is that it's not a movement, a political movement cut out to meet the current challenges that we're facing in some regards. But I don't know. I'm kind of constantly waffling on that. Like one example that you live in Minneapolis, so you might, yeah. It doesn't sound like you track local news a lot, but.
No, I do. I just don't want to talk about it. That's all.
one example of something that's like, a libertarian thing is upzoning single family home lots. And, you know, the idea is that if you can only build a single family home on a lot, that's a violation of your property rights because you can't build whatever you want. And it's this kind of thing. And there's some legislation being passed or trying to push through the city right now to upzone some single family home lots and allow you to build duplexes and quadplexes and this kind of thing. And ideologically it's, you know, a sound argument. I agree. Like restraints on what you can build on your property are generally onerous, but the material reality, and this is where I think libertarianism is just ultimately ineffective because it's too brutally ideological and doesn't take into account the realities that surround some of these issues.
I would agree. And that, in that sense, is a lot like liberalism, which is, you know, I agree with you. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, like, you know, with this thing, it doesn't take into account the compact that property owners made when they bought the house. Uh-huh. And you can go to a property owner and tell them, you know, oh, yeah, but it's a free, you know, this is the free market solution. This means that you can do what you want with your property and your property rights are being violated because you can't do this. And I mean, the vast majority of them are not going to care. They just like their neighborhood. They bought the house there for a reason, you know, so that there's a lot to that issue that I leave out. And if any of the YIMBY folk ever listen to this, they'll come at me with knives as they always do. The those people are crazy.
Hey, Davis, we're both fucked. Come on. I get on here 4 nights a week. It's like I'm just waiting for somebody to come and shoot me. It's like it's gonna happen. It's terrible. You know. But you know, in that respect, another good example of what you're talking about is I think for the libertarian concept of wanting to legalize all drugs. Okay.
Yeah.
From a conceptual standpoint, I understand that it makes sense. But on a pragmatic level, it just simply wouldn't work. It's
almost, you know, one way that I might frame it is that liberalism was an effective, it might work in a more homogenous culture where we could at least agree on basic things like the cliche that I'm going to say here is, you know, how many genders are there or if we had a more unified religion. The country was largely Anglo-Protestant for most of its history. And I think in that context, maybe we could have serious conversations about that. But I think the reality is that the makeup of the country is completely different now. And so ideas like that, I mean, I used to be kind of apathetic about legalizing marijuana. I was like, yeah, of course it should be legalized. Weed's not dangerous. But past year or two, I've started to see some evidence that maybe the whole narrative about weed being harmless has been very, very damaging.
I'm thinking of the exact same thing. And I was going at it the same way, too. I always thought, well, you know, it's like alcohol, just legalize it, you know. And now I'm starting to have second thoughts, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
I think that going full bore on legalizing it is, you know, I don't have, I'm glad I'm not in charge of making, or, you know, I'm not pushing for legalization. I'll say that. It does, in some ways, feel like the political coalitions building behind it mean that it's inevitable to some degree. And but you know, whatever the case, that's like one of those issues that, you know, a couple of years ago I might have just said, yeah, we should legalize weed. Now I think I've got kind of a different opinion on it. And like, from again, this is like a good example of just putting ideology before kind of the practical concerns of an individual issue divorced from the ideology that would advocate for you doing X or Y about it. Weed is more dangerous than I think we've been led to know. So I would be cautious about legalizing it, even if it's the ideologically libertarian, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm almost starting to think it's a bad idea. You know, it's like you look at what's going on in Colorado and we don't need a whole nation of people walking around stoned. We just don't.
It's like, I hate the smell too. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, when I lived in San Francisco, you couldn't go. This whole city smelled like weed. And
I haven't been to New York in a few years, but I've been told in the last 4 or 5 years in New York City, the entire city of the island of Manhattan smells like weed. You can't escape it.
I mean, you know, like, yeah, it's such a, you know, no offense, it's kind of an old man thing to complain about. I complain about it. Don't worry.
No, I'm not offended. Everybody's amused.
but I mean, like, it smells awful. It just smells like, yeah,
it does.
I mean, I it smells like rot and ruin.
Yeah, it does.
No, it just smells like just decay.
Uh huh.
I can't stand it.
Oh Jesus. So where do you want the pamphleteer to go?
Well, I wanted to grow. We've still got a lot of work to do in Nashville and Middle Tennessee in general. And then, you know, I would like to expand to maybe state coverage. And if we're successful in Tennessee and find some success in Nashville, then I'd like to try the model in other states and metropolitan areas. I mean, I think the opportunity, if you will, that we've tried to identify is that there is no oppositional coverage in cities. And I kind of don't like this whole idea that the right or Republicans or conservatives, whatever term you want to use, should abandon cities and because cities are full of corruption, et cetera. And I think it's worthwhile to try to build a serious a political coalition within a city that can combat some of the lunacy that you see in city government. I mean, you live in Minneapolis, which is just batshit insane. Nashville's crazy, but I mean,
oh, shit. I'm sitting in Ilhan Omar's district right now, this is one of the three most liberal districts in the whole United States. I mean,
wow.
Yes. And yeah. And so I want to address something. Speaking of that, so, you know, you're talking about the moniker of conservatism. So I have a lot of gay friends. I have a lesbian friend of mine, and thankfully she knows I do this now, and we're barely on speaking terms, but she hasn't shot me yet. But the thing is, I understand why she and her cohort hate conservatives, because for a million years, conservatives were telling people like her that their lifestyle was wrong. You know,
yeah.
I don't think that. So, you know, it's like there's a new conservatism, but like you said, I don't know if there's a moniker for it. I don't know if there is.
I think it's like, just get the boot off our neck already. That's how I feel about it. It's like, it's stop trying to pry into citizens' lives. Stop trying to tell them that living your life this way is morally superior to this position. That's not the job of government. Stay out of people's lives. It's really what it ultimately comes down to for me. That sounds very libertarian, and to some degree it is, but I think that the instrumentation of the government against that getting into citizens' private lives, and this is a huge thing that we could expand on, but I think that's been a disaster. And I think that's just the worst thing. You know, the way that they're trying to justify, I mean, I harp on this YIMBY, the zoning stuff, because it's one of those political issues that I kind of stumbled into not knowing a whole lot about it. And spouted my mouth off, not knowing exactly what I was talking about, just because it kind of on the surface seems insane. You're telling me that it's my moral obligation to support this rezoning or whatever it is for reasons of it fixes racism, it helps with climate change and lower emissions and all these things. And there's kind of this moralizing about liberal policy initiatives that just do not do anything to actually improve situation. They're disconnected from reality. So I don't, you know, that's how I feel about it. It's like, we're in, you know, there's a term that goes around online called long haul. It's this idea that there's a lot of interpretations of it, but it's kind of this idea that we're under the domain of the school marm, the hectoring school marm, who's telling us to, you know, do this and do that. You can't do this because this and that. It's what American society increasingly feels like. You're just being hectored all day by HR hall monitors.
Yes, that's true. Absolutely.
And like most people, they get the opportunity to live outside of that, and they kind of become unafraid of upsetting the school monitors. You know, you either get politely asked to leave society, or you find a certain amount of freedom and you realize that this is the way that we should all live. It's the way we've lived for most of, you know, I think that it's just the preferred way to live. So that's how I would frame the get the boot off our neck party, maybe.
What do you think is going to happen in a 24 election?
Oh man, I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea.
Are you a Trump supporter? Can I ask you point blank?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm smashing that vote for Trump button harder than I've ever hit it. I don't see any other. What else are you going to do? I'm not going to vote for Biden, of course. If anything, I would sit out. But I, you know, a lot of people.
Well, hold it just a second before you go on. You know, like I said, you know, at 33. I thought conservatives of your age are relatively unusual. Are most of your friends conservative too?
Yeah, I've got a lot. I would say that I'm, you know, I've got friends within politics, and I've got friends in kind of the creative world, and I've got friends that I grew up with around here, and most of them hew, I would say, like center right libertarian. I would say the average person my age is probably libertarian, unless they're a woman, and then they're probably progressive.
Yeah, right. How that works.
Yeah. But you know, most guys are just kind of apathetic about all this stuff. They don't care about you know, they just don't feel a personal, they don't want to get involved in things. They're fine, yeah, letting things be as they are. That's just the general attitude. I feel that way about some things, not that way about others. But
all right, the reason I asked is because I didn't want to assume you were a Trump supporter, because I, at 68, I have a lot of Republican friends who hate Trump's guts. And they're Republicans, you know. And it's you. I mean, Trump's an interesting guy because the hate for him is mostly visceral. I mean, most people can't tell you why they don't like him. You know,
I don't. Yeah, it's, you know, they've got that TDS, Trump derangement syndrome.
That's right. They do.
I mean, his most valuable thing to me is that his ability to draw out the contours of the enemy and to show people how U.S. government actually works, because I think it's very hard for me, in once you see some of the things that you see, to believe that we live in a democracy and that it's fair and all this stuff. And Trump, more than any other politician, at least in my lifetime, has been very effective at drawing out and exposing how government actually works. And, you know, it's not the one example. I was listening to the podcast that Tucker Carlson did with David Bentz. And I would highly suggest listening to that. He kind of goes into how government intelligence agencies collaborate with media institutions and how the internet and, you know, media personalities that are not affiliated with any of these mainstream things have kind of undermined the authority that they had on narratives in the past, and how that's become a major problem. And, you know, it's kind of what has enabled Trump to rise is people being able to skirt the mainstream media narratives.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think he's been very effective at that. And I think the more people see how the political system works, the better.
But I was just going to bring that up. That kind of harkens to what you're doing, because I agree with you. The Trump has, for a lot of people, especially exposed how freaking much the media just lies. And you know, so I started. I was editing a publication for 3 years before I started doing this, and I knew when I got into that, I knew that the media, that, you know, people, the politicians lie. I know that. But what I didn't know is to the extent of it. It's stinking awful.
Yeah,
and now we have an entire mainstream media that is that lies the majority of the time. And people, what Trump has exposed to, as far as I can tell, is that he's made people realize that. And now the average person, more and more, I mean, I don't have to tell you this, the ratings and the readership of like the New York Times and CNN, the ratings are crashing through the floor. I mean, these publications are almost bankrupt because people have stopped reading them, because why would you read them? They're just lying. And they are. And then you get, so I'm going to go on a screed here, forgive me, but I'm including you in this. Like, you know, you're alternative media. I'm alternative media. I know a whole bunch of people who do alternative media. And okay, maybe we don't have Tucker Carlson's viewership or readership, but collectively we seem to be making an impact, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's why you've seen the whole misinformation and disinformation industry pop up, is in reaction to alternative media that skirts the boundaries of the pre-selected channels. So, you know, that's what explains that whole thing. The disinformation, misinformation industry and fact checkers are designed to rein in independent media people that operate outside of the bounds of mainstream media outlets.
So do you think, I mean, it seems like in the last maybe month or 2 months that the mainstream media has finally decided that Joe Biden's kind of full of shit.
Yeah.
It's like they are kind of turning on him right now. It seems to be the kind of what I've, you know, it's like the New York, you know, the White House was bitching about the New York Times. The New York Times basically said, fuck you. And it's like, you know, I don't know. Have you gathered this or?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, it's hard to deny. I think to a certain extent, they probably have realized that their authenticity is relying on people lying to themselves with their eyes, and that less and less people are doing that. It's pretty hard to watch that press conference he just did after that, you know, document came out and showed that he was unfit to stand trial. I mean, you can't defend that. So you've got to roll out some like, oh yeah, he's old, maybe we should replace him. I saw an article the other day experts weigh in, and an expert on aging weighs in and says Trump and Biden's age is nothing to worry about. So you've got those people, and then you've got some people that kind of serve as a release valve for the people that just think all that stuff is full of shit. I feel like they're deft media organizations are very deft at kind of understanding what they have. They're actually very good at this, which is why they've stayed around for as long as they have. They know when they pushed it too far, and I think they realize that. So they let some articles come out that started actually criticizing Biden for being old. But they'll, you know, just as quickly, you'll forget that those articles even happened, and you'll forget. I mean, the average person will forget that he gave that press conference, or that that document came out that said he was unfit to stand trial, and they'll be back to glorifying him and talking about his old age and his quick dementia temper as part of his appeal.
Yeah, but then there's places like us, like what you're doing and I'm doing, that won't let it go.
Yeah, but you know? but people, you know, people, we're not a consensus mechanism for a lot of people. That's still true. Kind of, and it's difficult to stand outside of that and, you know, to be like, no, this very powerful institution in one of the most powerful countries in the history of the world is lying to you.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It is. Especially, I mean, I have to tell you, like, I'm twice your age. People who are my age, the primary thing is they can't conceive of the concept that the New York Times would lie to them.
Yeah, like, I know.
Right.
Yeah.
They can't wrap their mind around that. Why would the New York Times do that? You know, I've been reading this paper for 40 fucking years. Why would they lie to me? You know, that's actually the problem. It's like, I got a guy that comes on here regularly, David Strom. He's the associate editor of hotair.com. It's a Salem media property. And he's talking about this all the time, about the fact that a lot of the reasons the left is getting away with so much of this shit is because people literally can't believe they're doing it. It's like no one would ever really do that. You know, it's like, you know, transgender children, you know, gender surgery. No one's going to abuse kids. That's not going to happen. Well, you know, shit. I don't know. I don't know what to tell people, you know. I myself don't try to convince my friends. I mean,
I don't try to convince people either. I think maybe in my, you know, I used to try to spend more time convincing people that were kind of on the fence about it. But I think ultimately something just happens where you just kind of the veil gets pulled back or whatever. And it happens differently for everyone. And I'm not even convinced that it's a good thing. I think that it's probably best that most people, you know, some people are probably just better off not even questioning this stuff and just living their life. And, you know, I don't advocate it for everyone is what I would say. Like,
yeah.
I think it's good for some people to think about it and to work on it and to take it into account with how they interact with media and how they produce content in whatever form. For some people, maybe it's best that they just don't waste their time with it.
Yeah.
But we call that red pilling the normies in Twitter speak.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I don't know that, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think about, I kind of always when it was innately skeptical, and that's just because of my upbringing, of government. And I think that just kind of, you know, stayed with me. I was with me from day one and it hadn't left me. So, you know, it's kind of like innate for me. And I think that some people probably are wired that way and some others aren't.
I'm a former liberal. I learned this.
Oh, so you're a convert.
I'm a convert. Yeah. I'm still waiting for somebody to do a poll to find out how many converts they are. My theory is about half of conservatives are former liberals. That's my theory. I don't know if it's true.
Huh? Yeah. I don't, you know, I observed some former liberals. I'm trying to think here. I mean, what I observed with former liberals is that they, you know, it's almost like they're like harder core than the people who've kind of been libertarian or conservative the entire time. They come into it pretty, they're like, you got to hear about this. Like, did you know? I don't know. I meet people of all kinds.
My conversion was quite slow too over the course of, I mean, I've talked to some people who like had this eureka moment, you know, where they just like literally their world changed. That wasn't me. It was very slow over a 10-year period. But I have to tell you, one of the major things is I studied economics and this is not my bullshit. This is actually like statistically proven. If you formally study economics, you can't at some point not conclude that liberal fiscal policy is complete bullshit. I mean, that's it simply doesn't work. I mean, right. You know, you can talk about it 10 ways till Sunday. You can't get it to work. It's like communism. It's not going to work. My friends would tell me, oh, there's democratic socialism. It's never been done right. Bullshit. It doesn't work. It's never going to work ever. It's like just, you know, but they won't buy it. So
One kind of alternative path that I've seen is food. And dietary advice that the government puts out and health issues and that kind of thing. I think you'll see that become an emerging topic of discussion on the right, where they become used to. That was kind of the vanguard of the left. The polls have switched.
Totally.
The right has become more concerned with health and that kind of thing. And I mean, if you just read the dietary guidelines that the FDA puts out, it's enough to make you want to just burn down the entire.
It's funny you should mention this. I was literally just reading about this afternoon. So somebody's telling me that the thing about salt is all bullshit. It's like,
yeah,
you know, I didn't know that.
I even incorporate sugar in my diet, in a way that prior years I wouldn't. As you kind of like, you know, I mean, a lot of people grew up on the dietary advice put out by the federal government that I've kind of, you know, in the past 5 or so years have just completely done a 180 on, even if in the past I was eating, you know, pretty just about as normal as I am now, just a lot of steak and eggs and milk. I don't have a sophisticated diet, like aside from when I try to cook a meal. But, you know, once you start connecting the dietary advice put out by the FDA to health outcomes and understanding that they're telling you that eggs are bad for you, then, and cholesterol is bad, even though your cells are made of, and fat's bad and all these things that people have eaten for centuries. I mean, my ancestors and yours too, probably ate primarily dairy products and meat and pork and chicken and eggs. And a lot of the advice says that these things are bad for you, but they survived in much harsher conditions than we do on those things.
Davis, I'm a first generation American. My parents are both from Eastern Europe. My mother's 99 and a half years old, and she still lives on her own. She's not in a nursing home. She's still like living. She's going to the market. She's taking care of business. You know,
where in Eastern Europe?
My mother's from the former Yugoslavia, what's now called North Macedonia, and my father was from Albania, right next door. So, and you know, the joke about Albanians is that they're the mob and they kill people, and they do.
Yeah. Well, there's some stuff going on in Albania right now between Albania and Armenia, right?
Yeah. I gotta admit, I'm not following it that close, but I know that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But the reason I brought that up is my mother is an excellent cook, and I was lucky to grow up with an incredible diet, so it probably kept me alive. And she's like, she goes on forever. And, you know, I don't know. We're going to celebrate her 100th birthday. She doesn't show any signs of kicking over anytime soon. So I don't know.
And when the government comes out and says that you're going to have to eat less meat, those kind of like statements make it impossible for me. You know, once you understand the food stuff, this is just an example of maybe a pathway that someone goes to kind of waking up to kind of some of the things that we're talking about and maybe switching sides or whatever. And I still think that food is going to be a big one because health issues in the U.S. are endemic and they're not going anywhere and they're only getting worse. And the people that don't want to be unhealthy, and I'm not even talking about like being jacked and being able to run a mile in 6 minutes or whatever. I'm just talking about feeling good and not getting sick and that kind of thing. I think you'll see a lot of people kind of get into that avenue and find their way politically through that.
The thing I noticed that I don't know if you have this perspective. I'm just astonished at how much fatter we've gotten over the last 40 years.
Oh, yeah. It's insane.
I mean, when I was growing up, there were no fat people. They just weren't, you know. And now, Jesus, I mean, shit. You walk down the street to go to the mall or go to the supermarket. And the thing is, I can't bitch about this. I used to be rail thin, and I'm chunky now myself, and I don't like it. But the thing is, you know, I don't have to tell you this if you're into this. If you eat 200 extra calories a day, which is like half a Snickers bar, you'll gain 10 pounds in a year. And yeah. You live, I'm 68. You know, it's almost impossible when you get to be my age not to be fat. And yeah, it's terrible. It's awful. I hate it.
I was going to say, you get a pass because you're 68.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I look like shit. Thanks. I appreciate it.
I didn't say that.
I know you didn't. I know, but I do. I hate it.
No. There's a certain charm to a like rotund old man. I think there's like there's wisdom stowed up in that kind of.
Do you think that's gonna get me laid then? Is that what you're telling me?
It might if you play your cards right.
Oh man. Hey, I'm gonna end this if you don't mind. I've enjoyed talking to you a lot. And yeah. And I hope we can do this again.
Yeah, would love to.
Yeah. You know, what you need to do is you actually talked about it. You need to break the pamphleteer out in like 20, 25 different cities and do a different version for everyone. You know, I don't – like, you need me to tell you this. Like, you need more work.
Well, we're a – you know, it's a small operation. So, you know, I try to think about things on a 5-10 year time scale. So we'll get if the energy is there, I think we'll get there, but it might take a little bit.
That's good. But that's good though. You got it going on. You know, I don't know if I told you this, David or Nathan Wooster from the Epoch Times, he recommended that I talk to you. So
yeah, he's a friend.
Yeah, that was a good thing he did. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
He's very well read and
talented. Oh, I love him. Yeah, he comes on here regularly. He's a fantastic guy. Yeah, he knows his shit too.
Yeah, what? I think I just accidentally said Siri, I guess.
Anyway, oh, are you talking? Oh, is Siri talking to you?
She was trying to.
Yeah, she's a bitch.
Well, thanks for having me on. And if you're listening and you live in the Middle Tennessee area, you should go to our website pamphleteer.co and sign up for our newsletter.
And I will, Davis. I will put your I will put the link to the pamphleteer in our blog, the show blog too. So
great,
I'll do that. And hopefully we'll talk again soon. I'd like that.
Look forward to it.
Okay, you take care of yourself. All right.
All right. See ya.
Thanks. Bye. That's Davis Hunt, the founder and editor of the Pamphleteer of Nashville, Tennessee. My exit there was not very graceful. I hope he wasn't insulted or I don't know what the hell am I talking about. I can't concentrate after about an hour. So anyway, so we got totally goofed up here. Blog Talk Radio went off the air, went offline again. So you know, I hope nobody tried to call. I haven't got any text messages about that. I'm going to mention this, even though it's time to wrap this up. Our C block, usually I talk about science stuff, and I mentioned this in the show descriptions for today. So I'm going to mention this very briefly. So the Voyager 1 spacecraft, which NASA launched through the solar system in 1973, 51 years ago, and it has traveled farther than any spacecraft launched by humans. It's way out of the solar system at this point. It finally stopped communicating with NASA about 3 months ago, and they have given up now. It's officially dead. It sent data for 51 years. It's mind-boggling. I mean, you know what kind of shit they had in 1973? They didn't have computers worth crap. You know, we went to the moon in 69 without a computer. Well, there was a computer on the Apollo spacecraft. It was essentially a calculator. Basically, it was not a computer. They had 2K of memory. Yeah, not 2 megs, not 2 gigs, 2K of memory. It was nothing. They were still doing calculations with slide rules. I remember doing calculations with slide rules. Talking to Davis, yeah, I'm an old dude. I still remember that. Well, this thing is way out of the solar system at this point. It finally went kaput after 51 years. Now, the real amazing thing is, I don't quite understand the science behind this, the mechanics. They use a nuclear propulsion engine, and the thing did not run out of power. Remember, from what I understand, they don't know what happened, why it quit running, why it quit transmitting. They can't communicate with it. But as far as they know, it's still going, and as far as they know, it did not run out of power. It still had power after 51 years because it has a little, tiny little nuclear power plant inside of it. So, at any rate, yeah, so Godspeed to that, It's like, when I saw a really interesting thing on YouTube today, discussed with a physicist named Eric Wiseman, and he was talking about the fact, he said that he denied the existence of UFOs for years and years and years until about 2 years ago, when he finally said the evidence now is overwhelming. Something's coming here, but he doesn't understand what it is. And as a physicist, he doesn't understand how they're getting here. And of course he doesn't, because I just take it as a given that faster than light travel has been mastered by other species that we don't know about it. So I can't tell you how they do it. But yeah, I just think it's just, because he said that. I mean, he's absolutely right. With our technology, there's no way we're going to, at the current level, contemporary level, we can't explore the cosmos. We can't. The nearest star is 4.5 light years away, and we can't even come close to light speed. And not only that, with our technology, if you do, you become infinitesimally heavy, based on the theory of relativity, and then it's all bullshit anyway. So the best you could do is probably 80% light speed, and it would still take 6 years to get there, and we don't even know it's there. So it's like, anyway, yeah. So I will tell this, those of you who've never watched the show before, the only thing I know is that the American government, and I should say specifically the military, has in its possession at least 6 and probably 9 or more crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. That's all I know. Why do I know that? Government documents. This thing came out in 2017, the New York Times. It was nothing new. And Wiseman was talking about this too. He said, there are zillions of people. People say, well, how can you keep a secret that long? Well, it's not a secret. People are talking. He said the same thing. He said he knows zillions of people in the military and defense contracting who know about this shit, about the fact that we have these crashed spacecraft. It's an open secret at this point. We have them. We just do. Now, the stuff that the people on the Nimitz and Teddy Roosevelt, that they see flying around, those Tic Tac things and stuff, there's a good possibility those are actually ours, but it's based on extraterrestrial technology. And what the real question is, have we cracked this? Have we actually been able to reverse engineer it? Because I hear two different things, and I've had Stan Gordon on here. Jazz Shaw comes on regularly. They've heard the same thing I have. There's two different narratives. One is they figured it out, and we built this shit, and it's flying all over the place. And the other is they haven't figured it out and don't want to admit it. That they don't want to admit that they've had these craft for 50 years and have not been able to figure out how they fly. And they don't want to, it's partly a point of pride. They can't figure it out. So I've heard both those things. So I don't know which one's true. I don't. Well, no, if I'm going to bet money, I'm going to think the former. I think that we've actually figured it out at this point. Also, based on the stuff I hear, too, there's that also. So the only thing that I can't, myself can't square with that is the people, and Wiseman said this in this interview, he's talking to Chris Williamson, who I thought was the same Chris Williamson I had on the show in like October. And it's a different guy. I didn't know that. I thought it's a same name, two different people. But, he told Williamson that what he has heard is that we started building these spacecraft around 1980, and that's what I've heard too. Except the thing I can't square is that we didn't, for all practical purposes, we didn't have any really good computers until like 1990. So I don't know, in the 70s or 80s, like I said, we went to the moon essentially without a computer, you know? And so, and the shit they put in the Voyager 1, and I'm bringing this full circle here, the computer in the Voyager 1 was just primitive by current standards, but it was cutting edge in 1973. I mean, it was like the bee's knees or the balls to the wall. Yeah, but still, I don't understand how you could fly an anti-gravity spacecraft without a computer. I just don't. It's the same like flying a drone. You know, you couldn't fly the drone without a good computer. You just couldn't, because the computer figures out exactly the balance of the drone and how and where to point and power up the four. I mean, it's a highly sophisticated process, but the thing is, we've commoditized it now so that you can buy a drone for $40. But the computer power in there, it's not even the hardware power, it's the software. That's been commoditized at this point. So you can buy a drone for $40, you know, but if it wasn't, it would cost you hundreds, if not millions of dollars. And so I don't understand how in 1980 they could, I don't see how you could fly. To me, flying an anti-gravity spacecraft would be like flying a drone. You'd have to have some sort of computer control. You would have to. And we didn't have it in 1980, so I don't quite understand how that works. Anyway, yeah, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. So tomorrow night, we got the dynamic duo. Jeff Meyer and Jennifer Oliver O'Connell are coming on, and we're going to shoot the shit with them. And then on Thursday, we got Mark Tapscott from Congress, congressional correspondent for the Epoch Times. Excellent newspaper, by the way. I've said this many times, and it's not because I'm shilling for them. They don't pay me. Excuse me. The only two, as far as I'm concerned, the only two national newspapers in America worth paying for are the Wall Street Journal and the Epoch Times. Excellent reporting. Now, I don't link to the Epoch Times on our show blog because past the front page, like the Wall Street Journal, the whole thing's behind a paywall. So it's like it's futile. So we don't put up links. But yeah, if you want to, it's $10 a month, and that's the thing. It's like way cheaper than the Wall Street Journal. Although the Wall Street Journal is probably the best paper in America, but still, if like you want to spend, I subscribe. It's great. It's fantastic. So anyway, check that out if you can. You know, Kong News is free. Jeff Meyer's going to be on tomorrow. He owns it, so you know, check that out too. That's at conk.com, conk.com. They're our sponsor here. That's a very excellent publication, too. So you have a bunch of really cool people doing a bunch of really cool stuff. It's Davis Hunt. I mean, check out the pamphlets here if you can. I'm going to put them on our show blog. Is at Geminite.com, and the blog there, I will put up a link. It's pamphleteer.co, and pamphleteer is kind of hard to spell, I know, which is the reason I'm going to put a link up. So, yeah, check that out, too. Yeah, it's kind of exciting times in a way. I mean, we were talking, Davis, you know, he's absolutely right. I mean, the thing is, you know, we're the alternative media. And, I mean, we're not all Tucker Carlson, but on the other hand, cumulatively, we seem to be making an impact. And I want to thank you folks for watching. So, because you're part of that. You're the reason where this is working. So, good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. Good night to you, wherever you are. Sorry about the Blog Talk Radio thing. I will see you tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Take care, everybody. Sleep well.